All right, guys, I'm on vacation. So let's talk about what you can expect from the podcast for the next couple weeks, couple episodes.
Welcome to the Women of YouTube podcast. This podcast is hosted by me, Desiree Martinez. Every week, I'm going to be showing up in your earbuds to inspire you on your YouTube journey with killer interviews with women YouTube creators, deep dives into the inner workings of how YouTube works, and discussing all the things about YouTube culture and the impact it is having on our world. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with vidIQ, where they help you maximize your video's YouTube reach by studying titles, descriptions, tags, and playlists relevant to your subject matter, while also studying your competitors to help you know exactly what you should be doing for your YouTube growth. So if you're a female creator looking to grow your channel, level up your content, and learn from the best women creators on the platform to get you on your way to YouTube success and future-proofing your income, this is the perfect place for you. Let's do this.
What's up, ladies? Welcome to another episode of the Women of Video Podcast. I am, as always, excited to be up in your earballs for today. I am honestly overloaded, overworked, and super, super just stressed out. I am going to be doing something for the next three episodes I've never done before. I am at episode like 400 and not 400. I am at episode like 200 something after doing this for 2.5 years. And I have always tried to show up and give value and like make sure y'all have everything that you need to thrive. And I think that one of the things that's going to be helpful for this is revisiting some old favorite episodes. So to kick us off on this like 3-week rerun situation that we're doing, we're going to be going back to our episode with Taz and Alyssa. Taz and Alyssa runs a couples account together, and it shows the world what LGBTQIA plus couples are actually like elsewhere in the world. In just under 3 years, they have built their TikTok following to over 740,000 people from all over the world. Through the use of live streaming, Taz and Alyssa have built a family-like following with their amazing audience called Team Tanda, which allows for them to not only have the privilege of creating content and making people smile on a daily basis. This especially was helpful during the COVID lockdowns when Taz and Alyssa designed, built, and released an app for their community. They have paid subscribers to the app, getting perks like monthly online events, behind-the-scenes content, private live streams, forums, and more. The app is called Team Tanda. It's available on the Apple and Google Play Store. When we did this interview, Taz and Alyssa joined me as we deep dove into all that there is to being a creator couple, how they work together in their own strengths, and how they have built an incredible community that feels like family. In this episode, we're really breaking down like the challenges and struggles facing creators and how to fully be successful and sharing your content that makes you thrive without killing your following and your views. This episode is so great because it's such a different perspective on everything that is happening on the social space, and it still is, even after all of these, this time since it aired last. While I am away, I'm just enjoying some time with my family. We are going on a family trip. My son's turning 10, which is really hard for me to kind of wrap my brain around a little bit. And with all the projects and things going on, I just needed to reflect, sit back, and not stress about trying to like churn out half-hearted content or stress about not doing anything or worse, showing up with nothing. So without further ado, here is this episode with Taz and Alyssa, and I hope that you love it and get something fresh out of it as well.
One, I'm so excited for this like dynamic duo situation that's happening on the pod today. Welcome to the podcast, Taz and Alyssa. Like, I'm so excited you're here.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here.
We had like a little like moment before. We're like, ooh, I like your background. No, I like your background. Like, I like what's happening. Like, this is so cute. So it was a fun little like time we had. I always start the same way every time, and it's always, why video?
I think video for us kind of came naturally. I personally, even before I started creating content with you, I was always just on camera, like always put the camera down, and I just felt comfortable in that space.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, obviously, when we met, it was 2020 lockdown. And so I think that was when TikTok was sort of just on the rise, and that's our main platform. So that's sort of where it came from. And we were just having a play around with it. We had our own accounts. It was like chill. And then when we got together, we sort of realized, oh, there's no place for us to post like couples content, because I was posting makeup content, Taz was posting DJing content. And so we were like, let's make this secret account that's a couples content, because it was before we were in official relationship. So it was sort of like, our friends are going to think this is cringe. Let's just make it on the down low. So that's sort of what we did. And we just fell into like creating those 15-second trends using other people's voices and having like a lot of different fun, playing different dynamic roles on screen. And then after each video we put out, it just started performing like better and better and better. And then it's sort of just gotten to where it is today, where it's like, video is just like the best thing ever. We love we love it.
I prefer video still over like all of the other media options. So
okay, so tell me about how you create separately and together. Do you still create separately and then together, or are you more like in your couples account now than ever anything else?
I think we always prioritize our couples account and we create first always, but we go through phases where I don't know, it's at different times as well. Like we'll be creating together and then all of a sudden I'll get a burst of energy to create on my own. Like at the moment I'm posting heavily on LinkedIn and I'm kind of creating in that space on my own. And then I feel like you do it with TikTok or Instagram sometimes where you just like go on a spree of being consistent and posting on your own.
Yeah, I feel like I've definitely fallen off the bandwagon for my own personal accounts. I post very, very irregularly for them. Which after seeing how well we can do our couples account, I'm like, why do I not put this energy towards my personal? But it is a lot of work. And to be able to do that for multiple accounts, I just haven't mastered that task yet.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's a lot of work, like, because you have to be like this different version of yourself, this alter ego of yourself with your other platforms. One of the things that I've talked about with a couple of other creators recently is like, I don't like that we have to be this like niched persona of ourselves online, especially because we as people are so naturally like multi-passionate people. Like for me, when I like describe myself, I'm like, I'm a creator and I'm a podcaster and I'm a business owner and I'm a mom and I'm a wife and I'm a Harry Potter enthusiast and I really love self-care and I'm a military spouse. So it's like there are these multiple pieces, but those are the building blocks of like who I am as a person. But online, these algorithms are like, no, you are only allowed to be one and a half people. Don't like try and do more, be more. So you'd have to like, like if I wanted to have like my accounts for like Women of Video and like my business, if I wanted to have a whole thing about like dealing with like military life and family, I'd have to create a whole different online persona. And it's laborsome.
I totally feel that. Like I feel like before we had met, I was trying you know, to post a lot online. I was DJing at the time and I tried bringing in different aspects of my life, so trying to do like music and health together, and I chucked in like clothing, and people just didn't understand it. And people found it really hard to grasp. Like, are you a DJ? Do you like health? And I was like, I like all
I'm
of it.
I'm a person.
I'm a human.
And I think what's cool about when like you look at it's like your guys' social media account, you get to do all those things under the header of like, we're a couple. So we're a couple that lives together and ranks Dr. Pepper together. And also like does a little video vlog about moving in together and, you know, this or that, what should we wear content and how we support each other. So I love that you guys have been able to build this multi-faceted brand. So my question to you is going to be, how can we as creators build a multi-interested online presence?
I think this is such a fantastic question. I think the way that people can build it is show all the parts of yourself. So for example, our best performing content is our Once You Rank It concept, which is where we have, you know, multiple items of food and then we rank them after we taste them and we can't change it. That's essentially it. And that performs so well. If we wanted our account to blow up and continue to form, to perform really well and get millions and millions of views, we would post only that content and niche down into Once You Rank It content. But my advice is not to do that. My advice would be to video and capture all the different parts of your life and just post it, regardless of if it gets 500 views or a million views, because you're showing the audience multi sides of you. And in order for the audience to understand the new sides of you, they have to get used to it as well. So you're going to post that vlog content that's so different to your best performing content, and you might get 1,000 views, and then you think, oh, I'm not going to do it anymore. Just stick to it, because your audience is starting to get used to that type of content from you. You'll notice that it will likely start to perform better and better and better the more you start to introduce them into that other side of yourself.
Yeah, and I think order is important as well. Like I was saying, I tried to do it all early before and that didn't work. I think you need to kind of build that initial audience, have those 1,000 true fans, and then start showing other things. Because, and it just makes sense that, you know, if you really love fashion, for example, you might not be as interested in travel related content. So you can't expect those two videos to perform the same. Like, they're always going to have a different view count or engagement kind of reach. So I would say, like, do the thing that you're most passionate about first and you want to become known for first, and then people are going to ask you naturally, like, oh, what's your favorite meal, what do you like to do outside of work, and then that's where you can kind of show other parts of your personality.
What are your thoughts on being able to show other parts of your personality on different platforms? So, like, you know, Taz, with you specifically, like, again, you have the content you've talked about already that you guys create on your TikTok, but over on LinkedIn, like, you are just this, like, powerhouse creator advocate over there, connecting and sharing and opening up this, like, behind the scenes part of what it means to be a creator. What are your thoughts on being able to split those up in that kind of way, like using one platform to be like a main part and a main platform, and have another platform, like, where you're still you, obviously, but you can show and share these other parts of yourselves?
Yeah, I'm learning how to do this now, because I used to put all parts of myself on the one platform, sometimes in one video. And like I said, it just didn't make sense for people. But when you speak in the platform's language, so LinkedIn is, you know, people are looking to get like a different type of value than TikTok. For TikTok, we're trying to entertain people, make people smile. For LinkedIn, I want people to read my content and be like, oh, wow, like, I just learned something that I didn't know before I started this post. So, you know, value comes in different forms. And I think just figuring out what the language of the platform is, what the culture of the platform is, that will really help, because I feel like every single social media platform is like a different country in itself. And if you can get comfy in that space, like, that's where you'll kind of find success. But I'm definitely still learning on LinkedIn, but I'm having a lot of fun being able to use that as an outlet for, like, my more, like, thoughtful side, because we have a lot of fun on TikTok. But I don't know if people know that we know how to think on TikTok. So they're probably like, oh yeah, like, they just have a laugh all the time. So LinkedIn is, like, really nice to be able to be like, we're thoughtful about this.
Well, and like I said, when you look at your content, it's so intentional, and you've done, like, some, you do, like, long thoughtful posts, and you tag people and you use emojis thoughtfully, and then, like, you also support it with images and links and stuff. And like you're truly, I think, a good example of, like, understanding how the platforms work independently from each other while still being your same selves. That cracks me up. You're like, people don't know we can think. It's like, I'm not just this person that has fun all the time. Like, I am. There's more to me than this. Like, I feel this in my jellies so much. Like, I have so many thoughts and opinions about things. Like, that's what I love about the pod. The pod gives me a chance to, like, have the long connecting conversations with people. Like, this is like when people send me messages, like, this is where, like, their long words come out, like, oh, I understand you went through this. Like, let me share my story with you about that. But, like, when I'm doing YouTube videos or I'm talking about, like, online and video marketing, like, I don't get to talk about, like, my husband's PTSD or the summer kids struggles or but being a creator is like, and how this part of it all works and all this kind of stuff. So it's just really, it's super interesting. Like, obviously, I think, like, how we get to be different people. I really like that you are a great example of how to be, like, a multi-passionate, multi-interest, multi-thought creator and by like this platform is where I this and this platform is where I this. Yeah. And I think that that is like the secret, in my opinion, for how to do that. Like one of my mentors and coaches, Jessica Stansberry, her YouTube channel is all about teaching you about like digital products and making passive income in YouTube. But you go follow her on Instagram stories, and that's where she's like going off the rails about her dogs and her kids and her small town. But then like people also play with her over there. And that's where she's like her how to curl my hair tutorials. She's like, ask me how to curl my hair. And I'm like, I can't do this on the tube, guys. I could do it in the
YouTube. Yeah.
It's like literally totally. Like a saved highlight on her Instagram, which is really funny. Some people, I guess, have asked her about it, which I think is super funny. But I think it's like another great way to kind of show how you can be multiple people. And I think that is where you can kind of get into the trap where when people say you shouldn't post the same thing on every platform, it's kind of this mixed bag. As a social media marketer, like I tell people to do this too. It's like, yes, you can post the same thing on all the platforms, adjust your messaging and make sure like you're following like the quirks of each platform accordingly. Yeah. But what you're missing out is your chance to be different parts of yourself as an individual or brand, but it requires like more work. And you have to, I think, ask yourself, is this work and labor I want to do? Even though it might have this different objective and goal in mind, like, are you able to do that consistently and effectively?
Totally. It's like, if you have that hunger inside of you, that passion, that there is another part of your personality that is just bursting to come out, it should feel easy then to make that new content for the other platform. Mm. But I think you're totally right. Like, we have all of these tools now. Like even on Instagram alone, like your feed could remain quite, you know, not niche, but, you know, be about the main thing that you're bringing people to your page about. And then your stories could be even a chance to talk to different parts of your personality. But I think something that's working for us is using it platform by platform and, yeah, really showing different content on those different platforms.
Yeah. Okay, so since there's two of you, you guys get to either like you get to kind of tag team double trouble this. So again, I found Taz through LinkedIn, which led me to Taz and Alessia, and Alessia has her whole thing, and like so it's all these different parts. How do you guys divide up like the labor? How do you divide up like what's happening in your business? Like how do you work together? And my follow-up question is going to be: is how do you work together? together, because I love him. He's a great person. I would kill him if I had to do something. So let's dive into that for us, will you?
So the great thing about Taz and I is that we're very similar in our values and our morals, which is why we're together. But we are very, very different when it comes to like our interests, our work ethic, and that sort of jazz. So naturally, we've fallen into the roles of, I guess Taz is more, I suppose, like the business person. Well, how are we going to be doing this in 5 to 10 years? Like thinking far ahead. She's just comes up with the most incredible ideas. So she's like the ideas person. And I'm like, okay, what are we doing right now? And I take on, I guess, some of the more creative stuff. Mm-hmm. I guess that definitely is, you know, hand in hand with both of us, but I do more of the editing and things like that. So it's like we sort of naturally fell into the roles that we're currently in, which ended up being luckily an entire business.
Yeah.
And I suppose the way that we work together, we are best friends, we are a couple, we are business partners, and I think it falls really nicely because we have great communication, fantastic respect for each other. And yeah, it is difficult. We actually fight more in our business life than we do in our personal life. But we have the ability to just work it out quite easily. And we're very blessed with that, I think.
Yeah, I think we had a lot of teething issues the first 2 years where I came from a place of I had a lot of business experience and Alessia was kind of looking like, okay, like, where do I start? You know, and I was already like 5-10 years down my journey and my path. And I kind of was trying to mold her to be like me and it just wasn't working. It wasn't a match because Alessia had all these amazing beliefs about we actually don't need to work 8 hours a day. And I was kind of like, But I know that, but also, like, we can do stuff for 8 hours a day. You know, we can be here at the desk. And she was kind of like always reminding me that we get to create this setup and this life. This is our own business. And I think when we moved house, you kind of just fell into like more editing stuff as well. And it just all made sense. I stopped pushing Alessia to be like me in any way. And the business has actually never been more successful with us just being our true self as business people.
That's hugely amazing. And I love how you found your natural grooves. And it's probably why you guys work so well as business partners and relationship partners as well, because you know your lanes, you can stay in them to complement and fill in where the other one can't, which is a huge thing that so many people don't get to have. So like,
yeah, I mean,
finding each other, especially through a pandemic, like that's even more impressive. I think that all of us are a little bit jealous of this situation. I'm not gonna lie. I know I am. Like, I would kill to have like a partner that could take some loads off. Like my best friend totally. And I tell her all the time, I was like, will you come work for me, please, and just be my sales yeah. Because you can get like everyone to do anything. Like, I don't know how she does it. All those faces and voices where like people just want to tell her all their stories and throw money at her. And I'm like, well, you do. And I feel like we all need that person for sure. But like, it's just this ongoing joke that we have about how our relationship works. So it's great to frame that person.
I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you know that YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but that's why every creator truly needs to be using vidIQ to grow their YouTube channel. vidIQ's tech helps you tailor your video ideas to match what people are searching for right now on YouTube. And once you're ready to upload, well, it starts optimizing and getting you all the details that you need to make sure your videos are getting noticed. If you really want to dive in more and get started for free, please head over to thewomenofyoutube.com/vidIQ to get started on this YouTube channel changing tool that is going to make things so much easier for you. All right, let's get back to it.
So one of the things that you guys did mention, which I think is a natural flow into the next kind of part of our pod, which is talking about how your business has never been more successful than it has been. What is the business of Taz and Alessia? Like, how are you guys making money? How are you building out this brand? How have you been able to get where you are in these past couple of years?
I think when we first started TikTok, because that was our first and only platform at the very beginning, we had no idea that you could even make money from this. Like, we were posting purely out of passion and fun. Like, we were just having a good time. And it wasn't until we hit 100,000 followers on TikTok that we had our first incoming email that said, hey, we actually want to pay you to promote on your account. And we were like, oh, people make money this way? Like, we had no idea. So that became like a light bulb moment of, okay, maybe we'll start seeing some more of these come in. And we did. We started, as we grew more on the platform, more people and brands wanted to get in touch with us. And we were very lucky at the start. We even had global brands in our first five.
Yeah.
We had like three of them were like global known brands. And we kind of just were like, let's try it out and let's take on the opportunity. And it really aligned with us at the time too. So it all started with that 100,000 followers on TikTok. And then from there, we started trying to build it out.
Yeah. Once we hit the 100, once we hit 30K, we created like the YouTube channel, and then we created like an Instagram together, and then it was a Snapchat together, then it was Twitch. So it's naturally progressed into the giant monster that it is now, which is the best. We absolutely love it. But I think a game changer for us was actually getting management. So we got, or we signed with management, I think, was it the start of last year? The start of 2022. We did a 6-month trial with them because we were like, we wanted to make sure that it was a good fit for us and for them, I guess, as well. So we did a 6-month trial. And then once we signed with them, it's sort of like that was brand work that started to come in quite consistently. And I guess this year it has naturally progressed and almost doubled to what it was last year.
Yeah.
So we absolutely love working with our management. They're fantastic and they've been a huge help. But I think staying consistent, learning how to become better creators has massively benefited us as well, which is why the brands want to reach out and they do want to work with us.
So brand work is one aspect of how we make money. And I mean, our core part of what we do is social media. So it's like the 80-20 rule, you know, most of our time and energy goes into social media and that's where most of the money is coming in. But this year, one of our major goals and one of my responsibilities was building out other forms of income and just being able to just test out some different things too, because we don't even know if we like certain things. So one of those things were speaking and even like helping people, mentoring people. And we've done a bit of that this year and we really loved it. And that's a space that you can get paid in too. So we're probably going to explore that like more heavily next year. And there's so many different ways to make money like online, as you would know. So we're just kind of slowly building it out and making sure that it's still aligned and it feels like fun for us. Because at the end of the day, you can make money in a lot of ways. But if you're not enjoying it, I think eventually it becomes like a bit of a drain on your energy. So we're trying to stick to those spaces that fill our cup.
Okay. So if you could break down for us like your income streams, that would be really helpful. So I'm going to guess creator funds is one of them and sponsors. No. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I'm all wrong. I'm not going to say it.
No, unfortunately, we don't have the creator fund here in Australia.
Yeah.
That's not something, we're a part of, which, hello, bring it to Australia. Yeah. We'd love it. I think they did. Did they trial it?
No, we never got it.
We never got it. Yeah. So, yeah, brand work is definitely one of them. We can make money from live streaming is another one. Yeah. It's not as much. It's definitely like a smaller part of the pie, but it's definitely still there.
And I think part of the reason for that is because we don't ask, you know what I mean? Like you can make a lot of money live streaming, but you always got to think of the why. Why are you doing something? And for us, live streaming is not a money generating task that we do. We do it for community building.
Yeah.
So if you do want to make money through live streaming, there are a lot of people raking it in.
Yes.
And we know that lever is there too. But for now, we're totally happy. If people want a gift just because they feel like it, that's fine. So it's a really small part of our percentage breakdown of income. Our probably second largest would be our Team Tanda app. So Team Tanda is our community name. And we created an app in lockdown to give the team a space to like connect with each other because it was all about us. It was like everyone knew so much about us and we were just like, we could see people connecting in the live stream just in the chat and we wanted to give them more space because it's hard to talk on a live stream and get deep.
Yeah.
So we created like a forum space and it did start off as a Facebook group. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It started as a Facebook group and we built it out to an app. So I would say there's people that are on there for free and then there are people who pay a subscription monthly. So that's been really fun for us to just even try out. Like how can we turn content into like a reoccurring revenue where our community gets involved? Mm-hmm. So that's been really fun. And I think there's so much more earning potential there if we, you know, get maybe someone that's experienced in marketing. So, because that's definitely not a strength of ours. And then what else do we do to like make money? I guess we're starting to explore revenue from like ad revenue. So ads being placed before or after our content. So YouTube Shorts and Snapchat offer like little bits of money. I think it's like maybe 5 cents or 2 cents a view per like 1,000 people that view your content. So if you have a viral video, you can make a couple hundred dollars.
Okay.
So I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of it for us. Yeah. Speaking, but only a small percentage as well.
Yes.
Yes. So all those little ones add up though, for sure. I know that speaking is a smaller one on my list too. Selling my book is a small one on mine. Ironically, coaching is another small one on mine.
Yeah.
So what are the ones that you guys are trying to develop at? Like what's like your next like business project you're looking to do?
Definitely ad revenue for YouTube and Facebook.
I'm not sure if you can actually say.
But YouTube and Facebook is definitely one of them. That would be really nice to like fine tune and like build out.
Yeah, it's something that we in Australia haven't had access to before as well. Like Snapchat's recently opened up its like revenue share, and I think we made $500 off one video. There's so much potential there. We just need to unlock it. So at the moment, it's kind of, if we make that money, it's by fluke. Like if it's just a chance, but we want to turn it into.
It's like, not a fluke.
Yeah. Like how are we able to do this regularly? So we just have to figure out how that ad revenue system works, because it is totally different to how a brand would pay you. A brand, you know, is asking you to deliver on a brief, and no matter what the video does in terms of views, we get paid, but with ad revenue, it's very view-based. So, yeah, it's a bit tricky.
I love that you're diving into that. Now, what are you guys doing with Pinterest? I saw that you guys are doing stuff with Pinterest from, the Creators Crushing It?
Yeah.
What does that kind of partnership look like? Because a lot of us are super unfamiliar with Pinterest. Pinterest is always trying to do stuff, but they're so low-key about it. It's hard to, like, know what they're doing until they're, like, doing it.
Yeah, Pinterest. We love working with Pinterest. So our relationship with them started, I think it was last year. We asked our virtual assistant just to repost some of our content on Pinterest, just to put it there. And we noticed that it started performing like quite well, just repurposing, no fine tuning, no boards or anything like that, just having it there. And then someone from Pinterest reached out to us and they were like, oh, come to this event. And then we worked with them on like a Pinterest campaign. And then we've just continued to build out that relationship with them. And they've helped us like fine tune the account so that we can use more features from Pinterest. So they've really helped coach us on the platform to be what it is today, which is really exciting. And I think it brings in like 300,000 and 400,000 views. And now we're posting pictures on it. We're posting idea pins. We've got like boards created, and they've really, really like nurtured the relationship with us and helped us out and coached us into what the platform or what our platform on there looks like today.
Yeah, it's been great. I think Pinterest is so underrated in terms of creators using it. It's a fantastic search platform, which is different to a lot of the other platforms. I know people are talking about TikTok becoming more SEO friendly, but I mean, Pinterest is already there. And it's just, again, it's a great way to show a different part of your life too. Like we share photos on here way more than we do on Instagram.
Yeah.
Basically any story that we post on Instagram, you could upload as a Pinterest photo. And even just the videos itself, you could get screen grabs from your videos, upload the video and then several photos to follow. It's just that there's lots to play with on the platform. And the fact that the people in the Pinterest community are so caring and nice, like we never get hate on Pinterest.
Never. They're the best.
If you look at our comment section on Pinterest, it's just people sharing their stories and connecting with us. So it's been a fantastic platform to like meet new people as well.
I love that it's a platform that you're using to meet people in comments, because so many people talk about like who leaves a comment on Pinterest. Like it's the thing, like literally like people say like on stages, like no one leaves a comment on Pinterest. Like they're just there searching for ideas for what to do for their kid's bedroom or for their house, which, you know, guilty, but cottagecore is my favorite right now. But, you know, it's still, I love that you guys are doing stuff with it. Are you like backlinking it to your other social platforms, or do you like use it for your website?
At first it was completely just upload, don't worry about the links. I think we were linking everything to Instagram at the start. Now new features have come out in Australia. I don't know if it's across for everywhere, but we now can link our video pins, like our idea pins, to like different things. So we've been occasionally linking it back to our website or blog, like whatever's relevant, but it is one of the platforms that we kind of just prioritize getting the content up above anything else. And I think as our like strategy gets better on Pinterest, every single like photo will go to a specific link. But at the moment it's just like it's here, there, and everywhere. Sometimes it's Instagram, sometimes our website.
Well, okay then. Good to have the info.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about business and how you create money. Let's talk about your journey a little bit. I'd love to know about some of the hiccups and struggles the two of you have run into on your creator journey. We can do it individually or if you've had anything together, but what's something that you guys have dealt with and struggled with and how have you come overcome it?
This is such an interesting question because when I think back, I feel like our journey has been a really smooth and easy one.
I don't know. I think she forgets the struggles that we go through.
Oh, no, I do know. I do know. Actually, yeah. No, sorry. There definitely has been struggle. Definitely on my behalf as well. I feel like you forget it once you're out of it, which is great. But I guess for me personally, the thing that I've struggled with most in this creator journey is the fluctuation in like views, likes, comments, etc., and relating that back to, I guess, taking it personally. So I know that last year was a little bit of like a struggle for me. We went through what we like to call like a little bit of a low. You have like highs and lows on social media and it's just the ebbs and flows of it. But because I'm so new to it, I was taking it so personally. I found it quite upsetting because I'm like, oh my gosh, like what am I doing wrong? All this sort of stuff. And
mind you, the videos were still getting 50,000 views, 80,000 views, but for a creator doing this full time and coming off the back of millions of views, it really does impact mental health for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I just didn't really know how to handle my thoughts and feelings or why they were really coming up because we were still doing well, we were still getting work, I was still doing it full time, like nothing had really changed. And I think working through that and understanding that a little bit better is what I've struggled with, but now I'm on the other side of it and I feel like I've come through it.
Yeah, it was tough watching Alessia go through that. Like, and as a person in a relationship with Alessia and who loves her, but also a person like that's working alongside her. And I just have never seen it that way, but I know so many of our friends have gone through the same thing and experienced burnout because of it. And there was a small part of a couple of months where Alessia did need to step away from posting on the platform. I had to take over posting because it was just every time you went on, you were looking at, you know, the wrong metrics, you know.
Every single time we post, I will sit there and I'll watch the post for the first hour. So look at the comments, look at the likes, look at the views, because I feel like I can manually track where it's going to end up at when I watch that first hour.
Like she'll know if it's going to be a good performing video or not so much just by what it does in the first hour.
And so if it didn't do well in the first hour, it would ruin the rest of my night because we post in afternoons and just my mood and all that sort of jazz. So Taz really had to take over the responsibility of going on the platform, posting the content,
commenting, because anytime you went back on, it was kind of like that trigger. So yeah. It was tough. It was tough doing that and just watching you go through it. But you've definitely come a long way. We go through challenges still, but I think that was a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely still a learning curve that I will have to continue to like work on. But I think that's been the most difficult thing in my personal creative journey. Yeah.
I feel like one of the things that I'd love to talk more with you about is how you study your analytics, but I want to touch on what you've talked about within this. I think what I love about what you said is having the freedom and the space to step away because something is causing you mental anguish. That is what we're in this podcast that we are recording together. This is the first podcast I've recorded in weeks because I've been going through my own mental anguish. Like my creativity is just non-existent. I'm like, nope, creating sounds like the worst thing in the world. You know what sounds really amazing? Sitting on my couch and sleeping with my children. Like seasons of life. And one of the things that's so frustrating about being a creator is we have this pressure, it feels like, all the time to be doing and performing and obsessing about what we're doing. And even if you look at it from like a job perspective, even jobs like have set hours and you should leave it at work. And maybe you have a little bit of things that you do after work at home or something, but like, and then you have like a transition, like you transition into work, driving to work, or walking totally. To work or busing to work, whatever. And then like you transition home and you have that, like my transition is going from my basement to my upstairs. My basement door has a bell on it and my children hear it. And then I get swarmed. Like when your puppy come, like when you come home and your puppy attacks you, that's what my 7 and 9 year old do to me. Like, mama, like there's not much transition in there. So it's like this whole thing and the pressure of being on all the time and doing all that stuff. And I think what's so amazing with you guys is that you have built a system in place that lets you have that break. And I think for those of you that are like, well, yeah, of course, Alessia can have that break. Taz can just like take over for her and they have to partner. You need to set up systems in your business so that if you have a mental health breakdown, you still can have things happening. I have a business I run still. I have an agency that I run still. And I had to tell my team what was going on and they just stepped in and were like, we're here. Like this.
Yeah.
Here, we understand this problem. We'll be there for you to help you with this. And I have it on my side with my team. Because my team is all military spouses, so it's all like we understand our culture and stuff. You know, one of our team members is gonna have a baby next month, so we're like, okay, what do we do to make sure that like her stuff is managed and taken care of, and that she's you know the clients are taken care of, and that she's loved on and taken care of and stuff. And so stepping into those shoes and filling those pieces in, like you have to build systems into your brand that allows for you to take space. Maybe there requires a little planning ahead for you. Like if you're going on vacation, record the content ahead, have the team make sure it gets posted. Or if like you have to collapse, you can't do something, what are your bare minimums and things that you need to do to make sure that like you don't completely screw up the brand you're building and have to like spend extra mental anguish and time rebuilding? Like you have have to build space into your schedule. And I also would advise you, just from my experience over this summer, take a vacation. Vacation. Even if it's like, you don't go anywhere, to stay home and don't work for like a week.
Yeah.
I did 2 weeks while our family was in England. This is my summer of like, I'm calling it my lazy girl summer. I'm not launching anything. I'm not doing anything big and new.
Yeah.
I'm like, nope, it's summer, kids, outdoors. Yeah. Like it's okay. And it's okay. It's okay to have seasons where you're just not hardcore doing stuff.
Oh, totally. It's so nice to hear someone say that too, because you listen to a lot of podcasts and videos and people are just like constantly hustling, and you're right. It just doesn't work. Like we need like summer, autumn, winter, spring in our business life too. Like it can't always be summer.
As a parent, I get so mad about like Thanksgiving vacation and Christmas break and spring break and summer. So I'm like, I gotta figure out what to do with my children. But y'all, that school system understands.
Yeah.
The children need a mental vacation.
Yes.
A moment to just reset and just do nothing or do something different or reset. Like I live in Michigan. It's snow. Like it's a cold situation here. From like November through April, like it's cold or snowy and it's a whole thing. And so spring break hits in March and everyone leaves. Everyone. They're like, no, we're going. Even if we have to drive or take a train or like financially struggle, we are getting away from the cold dreariness that is Michigan. Cause like you hit that point at the end of March, you're like, is this still dead or is it coming back? Right. And the last 2 years, as we're still new to being here, our last two spring breaks, we've been here. And I am like, I don't care what organ I have to give. We are going somewhere warm. We need the break. So like they get it. Like those built-in breaks. If you think about your needs and the mental health and all that kind of stuff in the terms of even like how like basic kids school vacations, if kids need it, you need it too.
Sure. My heart goes out to like people who create on their own as well, because I can't imagine having to go through what I did on your own, especially when you don't have those systems set up, because I feel like the creator space has expanded so much. There will be so many new people in it that they wouldn't yet understand to set those systems up like in place in case that happens. And I feel like a lot of people would be early on in their journey as well. So they're like, oh, I'm still in my first or second year of like creating. I don't need to have those yet. I'm like a gun right now. I'm like machining through it. And it's like, that is the perfect time to set it up when you feel amazing and you're doing really well. Mm. And it's also the perfect time to have like breaks as well. Just because you feel good, it's going to keep you stronger for longer.
Totally. Like we hired our virtual assistant very early.
Mm.
So we were setting up those systems early.
I've always been the freak. Day one of the YouTube channel, had an editor. My kids were like under 2 and like 3 and a half. And I'm like, when would I do this? Like, and that's a huge bottleneck in the process. Yeah. And I needed to edit out my umming and my taking breaks to like sweat because I had no air conditioning. And like, fan. There's a lot of footage of me probably fanning myself, like trying to like, I had to have someone do all that for me. I found someone on Fiverr, and it was like, it was an investment. And it's hard to think about investing in stuff, but I'm like, you know, if you can invest, go to college, or you can go to take a class, mm-hmm. or buy a car to get a job, like you can find something to offset your workload so that you can create more or be more productive or do more.
Mm.
So
you got to value your time and invest into ways of getting back some time in your life. And like, I think at first it was always like, oh, if we have a virtual assistant, I can spend more time on other parts of the business, which is true. But it's also, I can spend more time in my personal life too, which actually brings me energy and fulfillment. So it works both ways.
The biggest lie we've grown up hearing is that we have to have a job and trade time for money, labor for money. And it's like, no. Yes and no. Like, yes, I charge an hourly rate for things. Yes, I charge. I have to make money by doing something. Or even if it's a backlog of like my YouTube channel where that makes money or whatever, you can amplify your productivity and your earnings by renting other people's time and or a services time and skills and resources. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to trade work for money in anything that you make, if it's your own business, you might as well just have a job, because that's a trap. Super bad trap. Yeah. I'm stuck in the trap.
Yeah, literally.
I have a whole book. I wrote a book about my struggles in my life and my business and what I went through. And I wanted nothing more in my life than to have a job. I wanted to be an animator for Disney. I wanted to go make movies. And then after that, when that didn't work out because of the recession, just wanted a job. I just wanted to get paid for a skill I had to make money. Yeah. Like, I am like, why is this so hard? And the constant thing I would run into over and over again at these jobs I would have, besides mismanagement of like leadership and funding, it was they never knew what to do with me. Like no 20-something wants to be told, we don't know what to do with you. Like nothing makes me feel like more like a freak than like that phrase. And so like when you have to make it yourself, and even when I got into client work, I found myself trading an hourly fee for my time and for my work. And I was like, no, I could make so much more money if I just charged more for this thing, paid someone to do it, and pocketed the surplus on it. Like, and that's like, once you can really trust your skill and your abilities, and then also like you have it work, like it's so scary to do the first time, but once it works, you're like, vibe. It's a thing. It becomes the lifestyle, becomes the expectation for everything you do going forward. My biggest issue in my business right now is I'm afraid to charge more. Like I was having this, I got an email today from my insurance company, and they're like, homeowners insurance is going up 30%. And I was like, why? It's because everything in the world is on fire or underwater. Like that's literally all that. And I'm like, I gotta charge people more. And I don't want to be that person that's like, well, everything costs more now, so you have to pay me more. But I'm like, so I have to go through this whole like therapeutic conversation with myself about why this needs to happen. But like, it's like, but it's still a thing. Like, we have like time and value and money. It's a whole thing. We all have struggles. It's important to talk about these things, I think.
We're getting really good over in our interview, but I want to take a minute to remind you that we now have a new home for the Women in Video community. You can head over to Patreon right now, and we have the link in our show notes that you can go find it there, where we're going to be able to have after show information. We're going to have chats. We're going to have information and just come together to answer questions and connect and support each other as creators. This whole creator thing can be really confusing and can be really lonely. So let's come together to support each other like the badass women that we are. Head over to patreon.com/womenofvideo to get started now.
Totally. And that was actually one of my personal struggles, like just money. I had a lot of money blocks and limitations around asking people for money, even if I had done the work, you know, and I was owed an invoice. I felt so much like guilt or shame around that. And I was lucky enough, my mum is a transformologist, which she practices in this form of like clearing limiting beliefs, and it's called Creatrix. And in like 6 weeks, we're able to clear all of my, you know, limiting beliefs around money and business and even in relationships too. Mm-hmm. So I can ask.
Your YouTube channel? You need to get her on YouTube to fix the problems that women have around their money stuff. I'm just saying.
Oh my gosh. Because so many people have it, right? Like, how many? We all get triggered around money in some way, yet it's abundant out there. And like, when you realize that you're giving so much value, then it's easy to ask.
Like, again, I have so many stories, but like, even like, you want to talk about like limiting beliefs, then women and money, more stories. Okay, so one of the people in our industry, I'm not going to name names, I admire them truly, I don't want to throw them under the bus, I was just shooketh by this. I had a company that I referred them to. It was like, hey, here's an email introduction to you guys, because I think they would be a great sponsor for your newsletter, because you guys, you have their audience and they have their need. And I was CC'd on all of the communications. So that means I got like the media kit and like their costs and stuff. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, how are you able to charge $7,000 for a single email sponsorship when the links have a 1.5% click through rate? And I was just like, my math isn't mathing. My understanding and my value of my brand is like, my email click through rates are open. Now they have more emails than me. They think they're in the, like the 50,000, 40 to 50,000, or I'm in like the 20,000 range. And I'm like, I am shooketh to my core.
Totally.
How do I need the dudacity to be able to do that. Cause I was shocked. And I'm like, So like, it's not even just like a thing. I think that like, we sometimes people struggle in general with understanding their value and their worth. But when you add in that like lady layer, it can be really hard, because we get in this place of like, I'm disgraceful to be paid for this. And you're like, no, I need to make 100% of the dollar, not 86 cents of that dollar.
Yes.
We gotta do that. And it's difficult. It really does. And I would think that, I don't know if you guys deal with this, because you guys are more in the lifestyle space, where maybe do you guys deal with that all, with like pay discrepancy or gender discrepancy or anything like that?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, I'm not too sure in terms of what it is in the creator world, male to female, but I know that a lot of brands don't really work with, or not, they are a little bit more now, like the LGBT community. And I know that previously that has limited us with a couple like massive brands that we thought it wouldn't have. Mm-hmm. So in that sort of sense, yes, I don't really know. The pay gap is definitely a massive thing here in Australia between men and women. Yeah. But in the creator world, I'm not too sure what the figures are.
Yeah, I think because the pricing is so non-standard in this space, it hasn't actually been like reported on much yet. I have read a few articles on it, and men still do earn more, even though there's more female creators in the lifestyle space. And I think it's probably, this is a great reminder to just like know your worth and like push for more. I heard a great saying It was someone on Clubhouse many years ago, but they said, if you tell someone your price, like in when you go into negotiations and they accept straight away, that means you're asking for too little.
Yeah.
You know, there always should be a little bit of back and forth. So, you know, go in a little higher than you usually do, because you can always go down, but it's very hard to progress up.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, go for it, ladies. You got this.
Well, and I think it's interesting too, like we're also like in the DEI era, like where we're trying to, the diversity, equality, and inclusion, for those that don't know, where it's like where people are trying to be more inclusive for not only like the LGBTQ community, but also people of color, women creators. I went to a conference in February, and I, while recording this, it's August, but when I went to that conference, it was like for brands to talk about the creator economy, not like creators to learn from brands. It was basically brands talking to brands. It was very insightful, because how brands think this is going and how we think it's going, those are, they're not the same conversation.
Yeah, true.
It's different, and it's very interesting to me, because of the biggest takeaways I had from that was like, they want to have the appearance of equality, but they're just like, they literally care about bottom lines. And so they were just talking about like, yeah, you can work with smaller creators because they'll charge you less and they'll probably accept affiliate payments from like, because they're just thankful to work with us as a brand because we're this big brand name. And I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, is it too early to start drinking? Because we need to have some moments. But then, like, I remember this gentleman I've built a strong relationship with. He stood up and he's like, what are, is this panel of brands, like some of the biggest brands in the world or the country. They're like, what are you guys doing to show more equality and inclusion? Like, it's this February. Like, what's our plan for, like, Black History Month and that kind of thing. And all of them, like, literally were, like, just trying to pass the mic to someone else. Like, well, we're working hard, we want this to be a part of what we're doing, we have plans for it. He's like, yeah, but what are you doing? Like, you can have hopes for it and goals for it, but what's the plan for it? Right? And
it's like a red flag if they're not doing something all year round to be inclusive. And you know, you don't, like, for example, Mardi Gras, we're constantly telling people, you know, gay people, lesbian people, trans people exist outside of Mardi Gras. Like, we live our lives for the rest of the year, not just in February in Australia when Mardi Gras.
June is Pride Month.
Pride Month. And it's like, we are always telling brands, you know, that they should include like LGBT people, people of color, women in their campaigns just throughout the year, not just on that day that we celebrate, you know, a group of people. So it's a bit of a red flag that they're all sitting on the panel going, oh, we're trying to make it work. Cause it's like, you should just have it integrated. Just
well, and anyway. I even like some of our industry related conferences, like they're struggling to like have representation in those kinds of ways as well. And it's like, they talk about how it's hard. It's like, no, it's not hard. You just have to try. Like there's a difference.
Yeah.
Like you can do this. Like I could bring you 10 women off the top of my head where I have their numbers in my phone that would cover all of your DEI desires.
Exactly.
Like I have a podcast of 180 episodes, or like 170 of them are with women to choose from. Would you like?
Yeah, you have the resource.
I'm like, I've been doing this for 4 years. Come on, guys. Put it together. But yeah, so it's a whole thing. And I love that. I love talking about that. That inclusivity and that need for it. And I'm glad that you guys exist to shine light on that and bring that. And I hopefully these brands realize that not only are you like that, it's not just because you're LGBTQ as a couple, it's because you create really great content and you have a really great audience that's engaged with you.
Yeah.
Just a nice added bonus that you are LGBTQ.
Exactly.
But I'm sure that a lot of people are going to like come to you, hey, we saw that you are, can we work together? And then you can charge them that LGBTQ premium. So I hope you are.
Yes.
Well, this has just been like a fantastic conversation. I'm so grateful for your time. For those you don't know, like I record my podcast on Fridays. Wow. I stayed up late and they got up early for me so that we could make this happen across that transcontinental line. And so like, this was a great conversation. I'm so excited that like, hopefully I will get to meet you and hug you in real life next year at one of these creator conferences. But in the meantime, where can people go follow you and just enjoy your journey?
So we are at Taz and Alessia across pretty much all platforms.
Yeah. So if you go there, you'll be able to find us. And if you want to follow us on LinkedIn as well, I'm Taz Zammit and this is Alessia Allfree. So you can just search us up on there too.
Awesome. And we'll make sure to have the links to all of their socials over in our show notes at thewomenofvideo.com. Thank you so much for your time, ladies, and for everyone that made it to the end of this pod. You and everyone that are listening are impossibly amazing. Until next week, peace.
Thank you for listening to the Women of YouTube podcast. We would love to know what you thought about this latest episode. So make sure to tag us with hashtag Women of YouTube with your thoughts.